Intro Unplugged. Yep. I'm Carlo Zari.
I'm Podge Mongi.
Hopefully this won't be the last either.
We said that yesterday as well.
Yeah, but like, who knows? This could be a last.
Full of optimism.
Yeah. Of course. And we're here with Elaine Reynolds.
Hello.
CEO of Simtractive. And we want to talk, like, we're... let's just start.
All right, so we're here with Elaine in the fantastic Grafton Street Bank of Ireland Entrepreneurs Enterprise.
Enterprise Lounge. Yeah.
Enterprise Lounge, yeah. That's the one. So forgive the background noise, but it can't be avoided. So
it's Grafton Street, it's always going to be nice.
Yeah. So Elaine, first question we like to ask people is, why did you get into game development? Like, from what age did you just realise that you wanted to make people play your games? Or
yeah, so for me, like, got into playing games like when I was about 10 and really loved playing games and got an Atari 520 SD, playing games and that, and like Bomb Jack was a really good start, and then SimCity was one of the games I had in that, and just loved that.
Of course.
So played, yeah, lots of different games in that, and but yeah, when I found like SimCity, that was like found my genre, you know, and still played other games, and you know, it's Game Boy, Super Nintendo, and loved playing them, but didn't think of making them because maybe it's different now, but when I was at school, it wasn't something that occurred to me, you know, like when you're looking at like your CAO form, just it didn't occur to me about making games, you know. So I, when I was choosing what to do in college, I decided to pick the thing that felt the most interesting. I was like, okay, what, you know, day in, day out, what am I going to be, you know, really interested in learning about in the psychology? And I was kind of making the choice like for, you know, the next 4 years, I knew it wasn't going to be a big, like life decision. I knew I probably wasn't going to be a psychologist. I kind of always had in the back of my mind, after I did psychology, I'd do like a postgrad in like business or IT, you know. So yeah, I was studying psychology and loved it. It was really interesting. It was great. I suppose the thing that kind of got me thinking about working in games was I was doing the J1 in America after my second year of college, and was over in San Francisco, did like a road trip with my friends. Nice. And did a bit of a trek out to the Maxis, turned up unannounced to the Maxis office in Walnut Creek, and after a lot of trying to get around the security guard, managed to get in, and yeah, they gave me a tour, they were really nice, and the lady there who was showing me around said, oh, you know, what are you studying? I said, oh, psychology. She said, oh, so you would like work in like marketing, you know, and I was remember thinking, oh no, game development is like, that's the thing. So that kind of got me sort of thinking about it more, and then yeah, I decided to do the postgrad in computer science in UCD, which is really good, and yeah, just kind of all sort of kicked off from there. So it wasn't, yeah, that like making games wasn't something I was thinking of from an early age. I'd say it would be different nowadays, you know, because just the way...
Games are such a huge part of kids' lives nowadays.
Yeah, so, yeah, all the kids' tools out there, and there's it's just seems to be such a bigger thing, like careers in games is recognised much more than it was when I was at school.
Yeah. So how do you think the psychology, does that influence how you make games, or is it like, is that just a part of it all now?
Yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, like in different ways, like... so, you know, lots of stuff to do with, I suppose, like user interface stuff and how the player understands things and perceives things. You'd have a background in that. Kind of stuff like reward mechanisms, you know, kind of and motivation, I guess, would feed in. Then, like, say, with analytics, there's, like, a scientific element. There's a big... When you're studying psychology, there's a big emphasis on statistics and analysis and scientific method and stuff like that, so that feeds in. And then also, kind of, like, these games I'd love to make. Like, when I was doing my master's, I did my dissertation on using the five-factor model of personality as a way to design... NPC interactions in games and
okay. So
all the stuff that, like, you know, games do with like social interaction, I think there's like lots of really interesting stuff there that yeah I'd
so how did you find
to do in the future.
How did you find working on Fable then, because I know that was a big part of Fable 3 was the social interaction.
Yeah, so I was working on Fable 3 only for a small part.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of involvement with that, but the big thing, the main thing I did when I was working on Lionhead was on Milo and Kate. So
okay,
I was trying
right,
to, I was doing a lot of work on Milo's brain and his AI and the that side of things. So I was trying to bring in psychology a lot, but then it's kind of it is hard to apply things to games, you know.
Yeah.
And because you know, if you want, you might want to have like have an accurate representation of, you know, how like personality to work or the brain should work or whatever. But then at the end of the day, it is a game and it's gotta be fun for players to play.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to get the two together. But
it's
a really interesting area, and I loved working on that that kind of technical game design on Milo and Kate. And
cool.
Yeah, I would say Milo and Kate seems more like a psychologist game than Fable Tree. Fable Tree is more of a systems game, but Milo seemed more like a lot more psychological, I guess, like a lot more like natural. They were trying to find some natural behavior in Milo, right?
Yeah, and to try like find what are the sort of like, well, I don't know if I'm using the word tricks, but it is kind of like tricks to sort of make it more believable, you know, like if I don't know, if you draw a picture for Milo and how he responds, and like should he just accept him no matter what you do, or you know, how.
So you're basically trying to decide whether you create a personality for it or whether it's just acceptance rather than the player does do. Like, how did you define for a drawing? Did you ever come to the conclusion that maybe rejecting a drawing was good for your player to make them better, or was it just full acceptance at the end?
So it would depend, because you're also reliant on the technology. Like, there was some really good technology for recognizing drawings, but it could only do so much. Like, it could recognize key drawings. Like, everyone was a really smart programmer who was working on it, got like everyone in the office to draw like key things like a boat and a cat, and then kind of to try to get like what the sort of typical boat would look like to be able to recognize. So it was really cool technology, but you know, it has its limits, so it was trying to make the game work within that, so it was still believable, you know. So it was really, really interesting challenge. Yeah.
So when did you want to start Sinteractive? Why did you start Sinteractive in the first place?
So I was working over in England, working at Lionhead. I've been there for a few years. I wanted to work at Lionhead because of the games they've made in the past, because of the Bullfrog games, and I got to work with people like Gary Carr and Guy Simmons and Mark Webley, who'd worked and had like really key roles in those games, and that was absolutely, absolutely brilliant. But the direction that Lionhead was moving was more to do with Kinect, and you can see with the games they've announced recently, they're not tycoon games, they're not simulation games. So it was really, really exciting, cool stuff, but it didn't totally fit the kind of games that I want to make. And also, I was thinking about maybe moving home. I've been in England for like 5 years, and I was thinking about making a change. So yeah, I decided to move home, and I kind of been thinking about setting up a company anyway. So I was like, right, I'll move home, I'll set up a company, and I'll make the games that I want to make. So that's what I did. I was working late one evening, and I was like, saw this thing about New Frontiers program, and where you get like this grant and to help you set up a business, and they give you like 6 months kind of training and support. And I was like, that sounds great. So I was applying to those to get a place.
Excellent. So then, how did the name Sinteractive come around? And, like, how did the actual dynamics of the company get established? Just at the very start, obviously with the name.
That's
what I wanted to do. Yeah, so actually, you know, at the start, I wanted to do more like serious games, you know, like games with a purpose, and games for education or for like, you know, public awareness campaigns, or for say health campaigns, you know, different. I think there's a huge scope for games to be used as serious games, something I'm still really interested in. So I was that's what I originally wanted to do. But then I was kind of doing research into it, and I realised it would be sort of like that kind of business model, almost like a work for hire kind of business model, which would be sort of a tough one. And then also I realised I still, if I was doing that, I wouldn't get to make the games that I want to make. And I was like, well, hold on, I'm setting a company, you know, this is why I got into games. I want to make the games I want to make, and I had all these ideas for games I wanted to do. And, you know, I realized from talking to people, like, if you say to someone, oh, hey, I'm thinking of, you know, making, you know, serious games, and they say, oh, great, you could do this. And I'd sort of saying, oh, no, but I only want to do, like, simulation games, and I want to do a particular kind of game, and the people wouldn't really get it. I wouldn't be able to, and maybe also I was being too restrictive. Like, I guess if you want to do a serious games company, you probably need to do a broader range of games. So yeah, for those reasons, yeah, I decided to do non-serious games, yeah. Just games, I guess. So yeah, that's what I decided to do. And the name, I was trying to think of different names. I think it was my sister came up with the name Siminteractive, and yeah, went with that.
It's actually like, it's surprising that no one else came up with it before, you know? Siminteractive is such a like clear, like, you understand what the what the company is for, Siminteractive. And it's like one of those names, like, why didn't I come up with that before? Like, it's something like, I'm actually surprised that it's kind of like the obvious.
That's pretty simple.
Yeah,
that's the
kind of like an obvious name that for some reason nobody else came up with.
Cool, okay, that's good. Because yeah. The name people always often get mixed up with is Siminteractive. Mm-hmm. Like, Sony people, I think it's that. So
yeah.
It's like Siminteractive. Yeah.
You just place emphasis on the squash didn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want to talk about what's
yeah. So
what
our
you're
first
on
game is a resort building sim game.
The hotel.
Yeah. So it doesn't have a name yet. Maybe by the time the podcast comes out, it will have a name. So many name suggestions and trying to get input from lots of people. Anyway, it's a resort building game. So it's from a while. I'm developing it for iPad, and the idea with it is that you start off, you've got a small little resort area, you've got a couple of tents, you've got a few attractions, and you're trying to get more people to the resort. So there's different guest types, and the guest types reflect kind of like modern life, you know. Pop culture is like the first guest type, they're like tree huggers, and they stay in the eco-friendly tents, and you know, as you upgrade the tents, you get the little like vegetable patch and a little, you know, eco-friendly energy generator. Mm. And they have to get a tree huggers to resort, you need to have this huggable tree. So it's like trying to find the humor, you know. And then like the restaurant for tree huggers is like a vegan cafe, and the bar is like a juice bar. And then like the next guest type are hipsters, and working on the character designs for those, so they're looking really good. And the hipster buildings look completely different to the tree hugger buildings.
A bit passive, aren't
they? Yeah, they're all a bit mad. The tree hugger ones are all very earthy and
yeah.
Lots of wood and lots of greenery, whereas the hipster ones are just gone a bit kind of crazy, and their hotel is from like a disused warehouse kind of thing, you know, so it's different. And then the third guest type is glampers, and then their stuff is different again, where it's all very pretty, like nice pretty caravans and flowers, and a nice little like woodland spa. So yeah, it's just trying to reflect pop culture and modern life, and hopefully for people to maybe see themselves in it a bit, you know, and for people when they're creating their resort that they can kind of put their own stamp on it, you know, because that's one of the things I really like about playing these games is being able to customize and being able to create your own thing, and you're creating a world, and you know, my resort's gonna look different to your resort, it's gonna look different to your resort. What we're also trying to do is to add like a little bit more depth to it than the average, say, mobile or Facebook sim game. So like it's not gonna be as in-depth as Civilization or something, but like say with the businesses, you can adjust the prices, and you can adjust the supply levels, and like where you place the businesses has an effect. So there's always like optimization to be done, you know, for players who do want a bit more. We talked about this before. Players who do want a bit more depth, that there is a bit more depth there, and like you can just play it and just go through and do the goals and unlock and progress. But for some players, they want a bit more depth. They want to be able to optimize and like find the best layout of the resort. And you know, I love the idea that it's never done. There's always things that you can improve. And like I say, with the decor bonus as well, you know, you get, if you place decor items, like they're not just for decoration. and they have a purpose in the game. They give a bonus to what you earn from accommodation buildings and activity buildings. You have to, or you can put them in the best layouts. You're getting the most, the biggest bonus that you can.
I think that's really important because, like you were saying, like when I got my first iPad, I was like, the first thing I went to was to try to find, like, iPad is perfect for simulation kind of games, like SimCity or Tycoon kind of games.
Mm.
And I tried to find those, and there was none. But I really liked about that game that you can actually micromanage, you can actually have, like, a bit more depth. That, like, it reminded me, like, it for me, like, it feels more like, kind of like this game, Roller Coaster Tycoon, rather than a regular Facebook or mobile game, like that. And I really like that because you can actually changing prices. I think it's a big deal, like, you know, and like that location awareness on the buildings. I think that's also pretty cool. Like that, if you put a building here, it's going to improve certain kinds of stuff. Like, that's pretty good. And the separation of kinds of guests. Like, I think that I really like it. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. Should I plug the game and say if people want to sign up to be early testers, they can email
absolutely.
Hello.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless
it.
Plug alert. Yeah. Yeah, if you want to be an early tester, we're looking for testers at the moment, and the email address is hello@siminteractive.com. And yeah, you can sign up the form on our website as well, or you just email us. That'd be great. Yeah, looking for some testers, especially if you like these kind of games, even better to get feedback on them.
So just about that, because there's so much customization. Like, I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but Carlos told me a good bit about it. Like, there is this, there's a deep level of customization in your game. So, like, is it hard to kind of predict what people will do with that? Do you have to think about, you're giving these people these tools, what can they do with it, where does it break? How do you get around that?
Yeah, I guess there is. Yeah, I was thinking about that today, that we haven't done a lot of testing for the game, haven't been played over weeks. You know, we've done so far, we've done testing over shorter periods and over the start of the game, first couple of play sessions. So that's kind of one of the next big things that we need to do, is to do more testing and balancing over longer periods, yeah, to see how it works out. Because, yeah, there possibly are lots of things that...
things that can step on its own toes.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially exploits.
I was thinking about the decor bonus. I was like, oh, hold on, are we making this, like, some really good player is going to come along and they're going to make so much money from it.
Someone will always find a bug or an exploit, though. There's always a people out there who will.
Well, like, most mobile games are made so simple that there's no space for exploits.
This is the most one, so it is more complicated.
Yeah, but there's ways to.
There's ways to do it.
Regarding you, like, I know you've last of Bluto, I remember you brought your game to the Bluto and stuff, and how do you find the community in Ireland now, like the industry? It's growing pretty fast. Like, I remember I came here like 2 years ago and it was pretty small, and like even over 2 years it's been growing a lot. How do you feel the industry and community in Ireland is going?
I think it's brilliant. I think it's really good. Yeah, like yourself, I've just seen it grow so much. Like, because when I left Ireland, it was, you know, there weren't any game jobs here, so I had to go away. And then when I was in the UK, you'd, like, you know, you'd check back to see what's going on. You'd hear stories of, like, oh, this company set up and this company, and then, oh, there's this Games Ireland gathering, and just, like, you know, more and more stuff. And, you know, PopCapper in Dublin, and I know they closed down, but just you. So when I was away, it seemed to just build, and then, yeah, in the last few years, it's just incredible. Like it feels like every time you go to a meetup, and there's so many different meetups on, but every time you go, there's, like, a new person who's making games who you haven't met before. Like, a games company moved into our building, and they already released a game. It was at a meetup a couple of weeks ago, and this person who'd, like, released lots of games, retro games, and there's just so many people. Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think it's a really nice, supportive community. I think everyone is, like, really willing to help. Like a Dubludo, you know, people will give their time, come play the game. Some people, you know, even just came to the office to play the game, to help out. And, you know, everyone's, you know, giving each other advice and looking to help out, and it's a really, really nice sense of community. Yeah, and I love to see it growing, and there's a huge variety as well, I think, in the games. Like, we're doing, you know, mobile free to play games, but other people are doing PC games, and like, we're, you know, there isn't there aren't a whole lot of or any kind of big AAA, you know, large scale games. Like, we don't have that. But yeah, we've got like free to play games. We've got more sort of niche games. We've got PC games, kids games, art games. It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Do you see the industry ever here getting to the AAA standards?
I don't know. I guess it could happen. Like, I'd love to see the smaller developers like ourselves, you know, to get bigger and have success. And I mean, I know some people want to just stay small and be one person teams, and that's really cool too. But I'd love to see more success with the indie developers, and then for like the bigger companies, say, you know, EA, who I think of a place here in Zynga, you know, the people who are doing support and non-development work. I'd love to see some of the bigger companies set up shop here as well, you know, to work on the bigger games. So yeah, I guess it could happen. I don't know if it's like, I don't see it as the like ultimate goal. Like when I was working at Lionhead and we were working on, you know, big teams and games for like a few years.
Yeah.
Like, part of me was, I remember saying it to someone at Lionhead, oh, what we should do is we should have smaller teams, we should do smaller games, you know. So I don't think AAA development is like the ultimate goal for the Irish game development scene. What do you guys think?
I guess you don't need to, like, if
quality
you,
over anything really, because as long as the game is good, it doesn't matter how many people are on it or how big the budget is.
And
the game is good.
And if you realize, AAA development is actually more, like, it's less common than you think. Like, there's only 4 or 5 countries that have AAA developers, like the US, Canada, UK. And there's a few more spread out around Europe and some in Asia. Well, Japan, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But like, there's not that many countries that can support a AAA industry.
Mm.
And like indie, like, we have a cool indie industry, I guess. Like, and it's about keep growing, I guess.
But speaking on the industry in Ireland, or the indie industry in Ireland at the moment, do you see it getting international recognition? Because like, there's like the engineering game.
Guild
that's,
engineering,
Guild
yeah.
engineering, that's getting huge, and like, there's
absolutely
seems to be
yeah.
a stage being built by these indie games for Ireland to really, you know, get up there with the top brass.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, there's of course, I think yeah, we get international recognition, and
yeah
some games already have. Yeah.
Hoping your game gets to stand on that stage.
Yeah, of course,
yeah,
be
fantastic.
One of them,
yeah.
Like, what, like, I'm pretty sure you love sim games and simulation games and that kind of stuff. Like, which games do you feel that have like served as inspiration for you, like making games?
Yeah, so well, SimCity, obviously, yeah, like the first one, and then the one I really probably loved the most was SimCity 2000. It was brilliant, but then also like Theme Hospital and Theme Park, probably Theme Hospital more so. I thought it was just like so well balanced, and the humour was really good, and to take a theme of hospitals and to make it into the funny, really beloved game, I think was brilliant. What are the ones, like Civilization, for, I just love how well balanced it is, and like the systems in it I think are brilliant, so that's really good. In terms of like serious games, I think Papers, Please, I know it probably wasn't a serious game. It wasn't like designed to be a serious game.
It was
a
serious tone.
It
was serious, but it went about it in a very lighthearted way.
But in terms of like, yeah, getting across a message and making you feel,
yeah,
putting you in the shoes of a person and making the decisions,
yeah,
the difficult decisions, I was really impressed with that.
That game actually like changed my view of every time I go to a passport check and stuff.
That's very true.
I see the knife and I feel it. Ding, ding. I can imagine the interface of the game. That would be a horrible work, a job. Like, that's just standing there stamping passports. Awful.
That's funny.
I doubt they get to deal with many imposters though, when people try to
see countries. Yeah, probably. Like, maybe not like in between Europe, but like in arrivals, international arrivals, like that must be.
Maybe. So the kind of the other,
you know, ridiculous question is, are you playing any games at the moment? Because the thing really is, if you're making games, you don't have time to play them. But do you get a chance to play any of your favorite games or even the new Sim games?
So I haven't actually played the new Sims or the new SimCity game. Yeah, and I think a lot of the time when I've been playing games, it's like for research. Like, I started playing Clash Clans for research, and then I got hooked and started spending money on it. I haven't played that in a few days now, so maybe I'm kind of getting over that. I'm not really playing that many games at the moment. I guess it's like, I spend so much time making games and talking about games and going to like meetups about game development that like outside of work, I guess I try to do other stuff.
It's very understandable.
But there's lots of games that I do like want to play. Like I do want to play like the latest Sims and SimCity.
There's this new game, City Skylines.
Oh yeah, that's meant to be really good.
I heard a lot about that game, and just yesterday I saw a video about it, and it's, I didn't expect that. Like, looks so good. I'm probably gonna get it at some point. But like, that's the kind of game where I need to have like one free day just.
Yeah, and a day can turn into a week. And sorry, folks, no more podcasts. Carol has stuck to City Skyline.
I wish I had time for that.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, that'd be luxury to have the time to. Go play that for a while.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, especially with, like, I remember the first time actually I played SimCity 3000. I just got back from school, and when I start playing, and when I look up, it's like middle of the night.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Is your target market the people with a lot of free time and expendable income? Because is your game the type of game that can be picked up and played in 5 minutes, or is it something that people have to monitor and, you know, keep an eye on?
It's not a game that you would play completely through, because like when you're away from the game, things happen in sort of real time.
Okay.
So it's more of the free to play setup where you can't like fast forward like you can do in SimCity and stuff. Yeah. So it's more a game that you come back to, you can play for 5 minutes, probably slightly longer play sessions, maybe more similar to, say, Heyday than to, games like Candy Crush Saga, where you can, play in a minute, a bit longer, more of a kind of sit in the couch, play kind of game, rather than a place standing up on the Dart or bus kind of game.
I think we actually need some more of those games.
The quick ones to play?
The games like my game.
Yeah.
That's what we need.
Like games that you can pick up and play over medium periods of time, not necessarily just sit and.
Well, my last experience with a Sim game was Roller Coaster Tycoon. Do you remember those games?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't played a Sim game in a very long time. And I don't think I should be allowed, because any modicum of power, I was launching people out of Roller Coaster. So, like, do you have tracking software to track what people do in your game, like, as they play it? Because, like, it'd be really interesting to see the level of horror people can inflict on a relatively peaceful environment, like, fence people in like they used to in
I haven't been thinking about that much, because when I play the games, I know some people love to just torture their characters, but I'm not that at all. Like, I'm like, no, make sure they're okay. So I haven't been thinking about that, but I guess players can, because guests can get trapped in buildings and stuff. So and also like the guests have like a happiness rating as well. So
most people definitely want to get people.
Yeah, they will want to do that, won't they? Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah,
they're just
gonna
put a bunch of hipsters on like the worst imaginable possible environment.
They'll put tree huggers in like the industrial thing and just drive them mad.
I think
that's something that could just be embraced, though. Like, you can have them, like, your little Sims down there crying or bawling their eyes out.
that would be cool.
Get out of here. I'll take you home.
That'd be great.
That kind of freedom is,
it's hard to
kind of cool.
It's hard to predict.
It's hard for me, too.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a game like that. Forgetting that.
Excellent. Anything else, Carol?
What?
Anything else?
No, it's been a great interview. Thanks a million for being here. Do you have a Twitter account where we can, like, people can follow you?
Yeah, the Sim Interactive Twitter account is just at Sim Interactive. And yeah, I'll just plug again the email address, hello@siminteractive.com, for people who want to test the game. That'd be great.
Yeah,
and then my Twitter account is at Elaine_Reynolds.
That's awesome. Thanks. Thanks
very much. Thanks.
Cheers.
Cool.